Hi, my name is Mitch Bender. I'm a professor of environmental studies at St. Cloud State University, which is just down the road, actually. I want to talk about accessibility in our classrooms, but mostly in our laboratories. I'll start with talking about the ADA, which is the American with Disabilities Act, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. It basically just points out it's an act that was passed that calls for reasonable accommodations and outlines when you're building, for example, some requirements that need to be there for accessibility. So door frames have to be 32 inches, which actually is a little narrow, quite frankly, for accessibility, but that's the minimum requirement. You might see Braille plates outside of a door. All that's done with ADA. What I'd rather discuss more of is what's called universal design, and it's an inclusive design that allows the use by many people with varying abilities to do something. So in your laboratories, that you would do something with a universal design so that everybody in your classroom can do it. You want to limit how much adaption you have to do. So you don't want to have a lab going and then you have to adapt it in some way just for one or two students. You want it to be universally designed so everybody's taking part in the same activity. Even more so, you might want to look into universal instructional design, and I'll just read this. Instruction is designed to be useful for and accessible with people with diverse abilities. Students provide equal opportunities to make use of instruction in a lab setting. Students who cannot perform lab tasks conventionally may have the opportunity to demonstrate their aptitude or skills in some alternative way. Like I say, I think the goal here is to try to limit how much adaption that you have to do and just design it universally to begin with. I want to say I'm no expert. If you're working on a campus, you probably have somebody that's an expert in ADA. Mine kind of came by just, I fell into it. And so, you know, some of the things are really hard and some things are really easy. You know, it's just how you kind of look at things. Some things are very expensive, and then some ways you can get by really cheap. And so I kind of want to end the academic aspect of this presentation and just want to talk about some of the things that we do in my lab and in my classroom. I'll mention delivery methods, but I don't want to do a lot of the classroom lecture thing. I want to do more of the what we do in the labs hands-on. But delivery methods might be looked at if you're teaching in a class, like providing written descriptions about a demonstration that you're going to do so that if someone is hard of hearing or deaf, can read it before they come to the demo, because they may not hear you talk about it as they're watching you do the demo. Giving details in a verbal description of the demonstration while you're doing that for someone who may be visually impaired. Or using mirrors to in a demonstration for somebody that might be using a wheelchair. I heard of a story where there was an anatomy class, and the instructor was adamant about not having the person who was using a wheelchair in the class because it would change how they had to orient the table. So in that case, it was an undergraduate class. The students weren't doing the, I guess would be dissection on the cadaver, and it was a raised platform. And so the person using the wheelchair would not be able to see that and said they couldn't take the class, and it was kind of like, okay, well, we're not really thinking out the box. Outside of the box here, we use mirrors. And so by tilting the mirrors in a certain way, you can still have your platform the way you use it and still give access to somebody who's using a wheelchair. In my lectures, I try, and now I'm kind of doing this retro. We don't throw out our lectures at the end of every semester, and so I'm kind of retrofitting mine. But one of the things that I've begun to use is alternative text, which you may already be using. But if I have a diagram and somebody is using a screen reader, obviously they would not be able to see the diagram and they're looking maybe for some other cues about what's going on. I'm a big fan of using alternate text. It's difficult to go back and do this, but I find that when I do it, and this is a PowerPoint feature, you can do this also in Word documents as well, I find that that alternate text then becomes a caption. So even if I have a student who isn't using a screen reader, but is viewing my lectures, which I make available for my students to study from, they can go to the alternate text and they can actually read a caption what I would have talked about while in class. So it kind of fills in those blanks. So I'm a big fan of that, and I think gradually my students might use it more and more often once they become familiar with it. Classroom and laboratory design. I'm going to just kind of talk about issues and then some possible solutions and maybe some drawbacks to those solutions. Navigating, this is my laboratory, navigating the classroom or the laboratory setting can be difficult. Creating optimal work surface heights may be something that you may have to deal with. The solution might be just to widen your passageways. The drawback there is trying to find enough room for all your furniture and all your equipment. That becomes a real problem. I had so much stuff in there, it was just a matter of taking some things out. What do I really need? I want to have at least a foot, a meter span in between everything that I have. For work surface heights, I just add a standard table. So by doing that, that gives wheelchair clearance. I don't have to necessarily have a bench height in order to have somebody work on that. So there's a choice there of working at a bench height. There's a choice there of working at a table height. This doesn't change. Maybe somebody wants to sit at the table and not work at the bench. I've sat in enough bench stools in my day that it's not really good on your back. Maybe you want to sit at a table. So that is an option. Safety is a big issue that you might want to be concerned with. Here I have a picture of a chemical bottle here, and accessing safety information on that chemical bottle, particularly for those with visual impairment, can be a problem. How can they read what's the dangers of that chemical? We're still working on this. You can see on this bottle right here, it's ascorbic acid, and it actually is brailled above that. It's actually a see-through braille strip. So you can actually see there. So at least a person would know what the compound is, but they wouldn't be able to read the safety information. By using a QR code with a smartphone, you can snap a picture of that that's linked to a web page with safety information, and that could be read out loud using the smartphone. Drawbacks is that you have to keep up that web page. I'm not really good at keeping up all my safety data sheets and stuff like that, and the web page that goes with it, and not everybody might have availability with a smartphone. Laboratory techniques and some instruments and equipment type of things. Here we see a photograph of a chemical. It's actually the same chemical. We just shot it all on the same day. And a person transferring some of that chemical from the small mouth bottle to a very small weighing boat on a scale. The solution would be to use a secondary container with a wider mouth and use a larger weighing boat. Still accomplish the same thing. Maybe use a scoop rather than a spatula, depending upon the person's dexterity. Give them the option of using one or the other. Drawbacks might be that somebody may have still difficulties holding the spatula or the scoop. You may waste chemicals using the secondary container, but I always use the secondary container when I'm transferring. I never pull right out of my primary container. I always go with a secondary anyway, so I always waste a little bit. Another issue here is pouring a chemical, a liquid, into a small beaker. In this case, it's a small glass beaker. A solution would be to use a wider mouth beaker or a funnel in order to give you a larger area to pour within, and to use plastic whenever possible instead of glass so you have less breakage. The drawbacks are that it may be difficult for a person to actually hold the container, and in that case you might want to try maybe a siphoning type of system in order to transfer the liquid. It may be difficult for a person to stabilize the funnel. Those can be unstable. And in not all cases can you use plastic. You may have to use glass. Pipetting. One of the issues may be holding the pipette itself, but also pressing down the plunger. Another issue may be changing the pipette tips. So here we see a pipette with an adjustable volume. You would maybe have somebody that may have issues with changing the volumes. This is where you can actually get by pretty cheap. Not that these are terribly expensive, but they obviously are more expensive than some of the options I have. Precision comes into play with some of my alternative solutions. However, I think in most of my labs, they work really, really well. And matter of fact, I think students like my alternatives rather than the pipettes. One might be using like this plastic, I call it a repipetter, where you can just squeeze the bottle and adjust the volume. The drawback might be that somebody can't squeeze the bottle, have the strength to squeeze that bottle. Or if perhaps they have a visual impairment, may not be able to read the volume that's on the dispenser. So you squeeze this and you want to get 20 mils of water, it may be difficult to see the gradations on there. The solution, another solution might be to use a syringe pipette. So this is something I kind of came up with doing some research. Works really well. Very cheap. I went to my Fleet store and just bought a whole bunch of syringes and set them at set volumes. So you can see that one is set for 5 mils. I have another one that's set at 10 mils, 20 mils, 25 mils, and 50 mils. Obviously, these are larger volumes. When you're looking at really, really tiny volumes, that's still an issue for my lab. I used a little bit of tubing to just kind of extend the syringe tip into the liquid. It may still be difficult for somebody to press or pull the plunger, but these work really well. And once you have them set, they're pretty locked in, and I'll show you in a second how we set them. The problem might also be that you'll need to use several syringes for a single transfer. So in this case, if I wanted to transfer 35 milliliters of solution, I would have to use two different syringes to do that. I'd have to use a 25 and a 10. The picture on the right is just the screw set that we use. So I just put a drill, figured out where I needed to put it. I would put a hole there and then just screw in a tiny screw that would hold it there. So the person using it would pull the syringe. They wouldn't actually have to see the volume. Pull it until it stopped, and they would have 50 mils of solution. In this case, it would be 25 mils for this syringe. That's worked really well, and students like it all the way across. One issue might be, so here I have a graduated cylinder with approximately 83 milliliters of water in it, and I have a plastic beaker sitting on a scale, also measuring 83. So in some cases, it may be an issue to pour into a small graduated cylinder, and it may be difficult for somebody to actually determine the volume within that graduated cylinder. A solution might be to use a wide mouth beaker, and then weigh that solution instead. Of course, this only works when you're really close to having 1 gram equals 1 milliliter. It doesn't work for all solutions, but in some cases, this will work really well. And some scales can actually be outfitted with audio output so that a person wouldn't have to actually read the numbers there. Our technology is great. We've got a lot of this touchscreen type of technology these days. That obviously can be an issue. What I like is this veneer LabQuest gives you the option of actually having a push button, a larger push button, which is easier to find. They also set this one up with audio output, so you can take pH and actually hear the pH rather than have to read the graphics. I'm still working on how to do volumetric stuff, so if you guys got some ideas, I'd be glad to hear that. That's really difficult working with volumetric flasks. So here I have a volumetric flask. We haven't really figured out how we can use this in a more adapted way. But it also allows you to be very creative. This is a textural triangle that I did with wood. Now with 3D printing, I think there's a lot of options that we can do very, very cheaply in the future. But I like this because it's a textural triangle and you actually have to use your fingers to work it. And so, you know, you can come up with some really creative outside-the-box ideas for doing something in a much different way, a much more universally designed way. If you want to contact me, if you have questions or suggestions, I'd be glad to hear from you. We have time for